We're talking about genetic genealogy used in forensics here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Genealogy sites allow you to trace your family roots and find your ancestors, and now police departments and the FBI are using them to crack cold cases and find suspects. Last month, William Earl Talbot II became the first person convicted of murder with the help of genetic genealogy. And this has really big implications for crime fighting and also privacy. Do you think genealogy sites should cooperate with law enforcement in order to track down crime suspects? Or do you think it's these companies' responsibility to protect the private genetic information of their customers? We're at 800-642-1234 for you to join in. Heather Tall Murphy is a reporter for the New York Times, and she writes about how DNA technology affects our lives. Heather, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much.
So how does this genetic genealogy work, and how is it different from regular DNA testing?
Yeah, so it's really quite different in the sense that genetic genealogy is an innovation in a technique that enables typically a genetic genealogist, I call them advanced puzzle masters who are skilled at solving these sort of unusual puzzles of DNA. And they take DNA and instead of uploading it to a traditional police database or the FBI's criminal database, which is full of people mostly convicted of felonies and some people arrested, they take it and they upload it to one of two genealogy databases. And they're not looking for the person. They're not looking for the suspect who matches the DNA from the crime scene the way that they've been doing for years when they've been using criminal DNA databases. Instead, what they're doing is they're looking for relatives of that person, perhaps a second cousin, maybe even a third cousin, or maybe they'll get lucky and find someone closer. From there, they're building a family tree, they're building it back, they're building it forward, they're filling it in with all kinds of things, and that is how they arrive at a hypothesis of a possible name that could be a name to that DNA. So it's a pretty different process in terms of how they arrive at putting a name to DNA.
So they're kind of reverse engineering a family ancestry genetic information. And these big databases, one is called GEDmatch. Is that right?
That is right. Yes,
and
exactly.
Family tree DNA. So how do they work? And how does this public database get created? Where did it come from?
Yeah, so, you know, a lot of people are calling it a public database. In fact, in this recent trial in which this technique was tested in court for the first time, both the prosecution and the defense was throwing around the term public database. I think actually some people would object to calling it a public database because these two databases are privately owned databases. They're not exactly like Wikipedia. These are not nonprofits that are, you know, that function that way, but they're public in the sense that they're easy to search. If you join 23andMe, which millions of Americans have, if you join Ancestry.com, which millions of Americans have as well, then what you know is that you make an account, it's behind your login. In order to search for relatives and upload anything, you have to go through them, you have to send them your spit, they process your spit. They do all that. It's a closed system. The difference with Family Tree DNA and GEDmatch, they're not closed systems. So they're publicly searchable in the sense that even if I years ago got my DNA tested with 23andMe and now I decide, you know what, I'm ready to see if I can find even more relatives or I wasn't satisfied what I found there. I can take that file that was analyzed with 23andMe and I can upload that file to GEDmatch or I can upload that file to Family Tree DNA. And in that way, it makes it possible for somebody who has had that file analyzed even with a private lab, maybe it was DNA that was taken from a crime scene, to upload it to those sites. And those sites have rules that have actually changed again. They keep changing in the past year as all this stuff is coming to the forefront. But those rules about how those sites can be used is different than the sites like 23andMe and Ancestry that even more of us have used.
We're talking genetic genealogy with Heather Tall Murphy. She's a reporter with the New York Times writing about how DNA technology impacts our lives. Do you think genealogy sites should cooperate with law enforcement in order to help track down crime suspects? Or do you think it's these companies' responsibility to protect the private genetic information of their customers? We're at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Heather, earlier this summer, genetic genealogy was used in court for the first time. It led to a guilty verdict in a murder case. What happened there?
Yeah, so what happened there is we have this young Canadian couple, Jay Cook and Tanya Van Kuhlenberg. They're 20 and 18, and they were last seen alive on a ferry going to the Seattle area from Canada in 1987. And like many of the cases that have been advanced recently using genetic genealogy, there was a DNA profile. It was known simply as Individual A. And for decades, detectives could not figure out how to identify Individual A. And that was the primary lead they had, is Individual A. It was actually in this particular case, it was DNA that had been gathered from semen. There had been apparently a sexual assault on Tanya, and this is what they had. And so what happened is that in 2017, the detective started to hear, there's this other approach to putting a name to DNA beyond what he could do in the criminal DNA database. Because the criminal DNA database, again, particularly in Washington State, you upload a DNA profile. If your person is a convicted felon, then you get a match. You're not actually in Washington State permitted to do any kind of familial searching. And then he heard about this new technique. And so what happened is this case that had gone unsolved for decades, actually within the course of a single day, the genealogist, she's very skilled. This isn't to say that any of us could do this, but the genealogist uploaded to GEDmatch and did this sort of puzzle technique with the family history. She built it back to a common ancestor. She found these two second cousins. She built it forward. She found the potential parents. They had one son. The one son was about the age of the person they suspected would have killed them. It turned out the parents had lived 7 miles from one of the crime scenes. And suddenly, after all these years, they had an arrest. So that is the backstory of this case. And so what happened is that this was the first time that this technique had been tested in court, meaning that previously we've seen there's been about 50 identifications of people and we've seen people plead guilty. But a big question was for many prosecutors and detectives and genealogists is how is this going to play out in court? Because solving this case essentially relied on relatives' DNA to identify the suspect's DNA. And those relatives' DNA arguably had no idea at that point in time that their DNA would be used that way. So is this okay? And what ended up happening is there was no challenge to the technique. It soared on through. Even the defense did not choose to challenge or pick apart the technique. They treated it as just another tip system, and he was convicted.
We're talking with New York Times reporter Heather Tall Murphy. She writes about DNA technology and she stays with us. Do you think law enforcement agencies should be allowed to use DNA from genealogy websites in order to help build their cases? Have you ever used a genealogy website to explore your family history? Did you provide genetic information about yourself? What do you think about using it for purposes of crime fighting? Join in at 800-642-1234. Back in a minute here on the Ideas Network. We're at the intersection of genetic genealogy and crime fighting here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Law enforcement agencies are using genetic information uploaded to a database to help find suspects, maybe crack a cold case. Genetic genealogy is where investigators try to link crime scene data to DNA from biological relatives in the hopes of generating leads for identifying suspects. And the recent rise of online, easily accessible DNA databases is taking this to a whole new level. There are dozens of criminal cases pending, which have been built on leads generated by genetic genealogy, including a double homicide and rape case here in Wisconsin. Have you ever used a genealogy site to trace your family history? Did you provide genetic information? Do you think these DNA databases should cooperate with law enforcement? Join in with your thoughts, 800-642-1234. New York Times reporter Heather Tell Murphy stays with us. Let's go to the phones now with Matt joining us from southeastern Minnesota. Hi, Matt.
Hi, Kate.
What's on your mind about this?
Well, I've been listening to this for a while, and I understand the good here, and I understand the need here, but what I don't understand is how it's justifiable, because this is your private data, for one, but for two, it's kind of dangerous to have all this information accessible when there's cyber terrorism, and we hear about Chinese experimenting with genome splicing and cookie cutter babies and whatnot.
So Matt finds this pretty scary. Heather, what are the implications for regulating this?
Yeah, so I think there are people who, a lot of people who do find it scary. I mean, I think one thing to clarify in terms of, you know, you mentioned genome splicing, is what people are uploading is not, you know, these sites don't actually have these people's DNA. What they have is their files that contain all this genetic information. But that is precisely also why some people do find it scary, because that information tells so much about ourselves, and we're actually still in the process of understanding what exactly that tells about ourselves. And so a great deal can be learned. You know, I think there's some people who argue, well, the internet already has so much information. But then others would say that there is something very different about all the information about us on the internet combined with this DNA that creates a whole new type of privacy matter. It's not just those of us who've actually taken a DNA test that could be identified using this technique. All that's required is one or two or probably two of people who are in the third cousin range for us have joined these sites. And then even if we have never taken a DNA test, then our saliva could be identified by law enforcement. And so, yeah, so though these are broad concerns, but there's some people say this has already happened now. So now it's a matter of thinking about what do we do about it. And at this point, it is not regulated in any capacity.
Well, let's look at those legal implications. Law enforcement already use a national DNA database, FBI database. It's called CODIS. How is that different?
Yeah, so CODIS is a highly, highly regulated database. The way it works depends somewhat on the state, but there is a lot of processes. So the types of crimes so first of all, it's mostly for convicted felons. In Wisconsin, actually, some arrestees' DNA can be uploaded to it depending on their crime. Again, that depends on states. But the way that police can search it is also highly regulated. I was actually just looking out of curiosity how it works in Wisconsin. And in Wisconsin, there, for example, police can do some searches for people's relatives. It's not the same kind of search they do on genealogy sites, but it's only a set number per year. And they have to follow a very specific protocol of asking permissions and clarifying it's a certain type of crime and all of that. With this new world of genetic genealogy, there is no procedure yet. So police can use it in different ways. They don't have to necessarily go through any sort of process. Now that the databases have set certain kinds of crimes that it can be used for, but even that has changed again. So whereas GEDmatch did not permit it for burglary a few months ago, now they've added that those who have opted in for law enforcement searches are enabling law enforcement to use it for burglary. And some people feel quite differently about burglary and murder in terms of helping law enforcement arrest their relatives.
Let's bring in Scott now, joining us from Jefferson. Hi, Scott.
Hi.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to say that I don't think that information that people, like genetic information, I don't think it should be open for people to take for searches, for crimes or whatever. If you really sit and think about it, it could have almost like Orwellian implications. And none of it's guaranteed to, it scares me. I think that people should have the right to use these services just to be able to look up family information and maybe find out about like health issues or look up old family members without having to worry about their genetic information being taken for.
Have you done it personally, Scott? Have you looked at your family ancestry this way?
You know, I haven't, and the simple reason is because I have been afraid of what, you know, might happen to my information in the future.
Scott, thanks for the call. Will this perhaps impact people who want to use a registry like 23andMe? Could this even impact what those, you know, the number of people who are using sites like that?
I think at this point, it's impacting people in 23andMe in the sense that there are some people who are feeling more afraid. And they're actually, I've heard some reports that there has been that less people have been actually taking DNA tests and uploading to 23andMe and Ancestry in the last 6 months or so than they were before. Possibly, we don't know for sure, because people are starting to feel uncomfortable about some of that. That might also just be that it was moving at such a fast pace in the last year and then it slowed. But I think right now the primary impact on 23andMe and sites that are not being searched by law enforcement is that people are just feeling kind of uncomfortable because those sites are not working with law enforcement in the same way. But one thing that I have been told is that now, as law enforcement is getting more and more and more accustomed to working with these sites in cases where they're explicitly sanctioned to do so, or people have opted in to allow them to do so, or their privacy agreements allows them to do so, it's perhaps going to make them more eager to make more requests to use those other sites. And they'll have to go through some requests to do that, but it could increase the chances that they're going to try to do that.
Let's bring in Brian now from Heartland with thoughts on this. Brian, hi.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
So I've used 23andMe, actually. I've used both the ancestry and the health portion of it, and I was very pleased with it. But I also have an understanding that I'd like to hear the opinion of your guest on, and that it, when I submitted this genetic information, unfortunately, I think in the 21st...
Brian, are you there? Oh, I think he got cut up. I'm trying to figure out what he's trying to say there.
I know, I'm trying to figure out as well. I don't know. I mean, again, a concern a lot of people have is if they uploaded to 23andMe, is my DNA being used in these law enforcement searches? And the answer, again, is... It's not in the way that it's being used on these other sites. And it is important to be clear that on FamilyTreeDNA, everyone is opted in to be used for law enforcement, everyone in the United States. On GEDmatch, they've gone through different iterations, and you have to actively check a box and say, yes, you can use my stuff for law enforcement. Now, whether everyone is going to adhere to only using people who have opted in or who've said yes is something some people wonder about. But that is an important differentiation between how it works there and on 23andMe.
Let's bring in Robert in Oak Creek. Robert, hi.
Hi. I kind of want to correlate this to the Apple FBI issue that we had a few years ago, where Apple wouldn't let somebody onto their phone. I think that the genetic matching is probably less intimate. You're literally just looking at numbers and correlations between one person and another through data, and not even like intimate data, whereas in a phone there's pictures, there's phone calls, there's a whole lot of minute to minute data to collect, and I think that's far more intimate and far more scary to let just anybody have, especially considering that it's not just the owner of the phone, it's also the people that they're in contact with and who they've taken pictures of.
Robert, thanks. Heather, as we run short on time here, your thoughts on that?
I mean, I think the parallel to a phone is interesting. I think that phones in some ways are easier for us to wrap our minds around because we hold them in our hands, etc. But I think it's just worth considering as DNA continues to evolve, tiny bits of DNA can be, we leave them everywhere we go. So some people will say, okay, just like a phone in your hand, we leave a trail of DNA. Potentially in the future, as this continues to evolve, it's easy to therefore also see everywhere that somebody has been, as it's easier and easier to identify DNA. But it, agreed, it's more, it's a little bit more tangible to think about somebody breaking into a phone for a lot of people than to think about what it, this means with DNA.
Heather, thank you for joining us.
Sure, thank you.
Heather Tall Murphy is a reporter for the New York Times. Coming up, Wisconsin State Treasurer Sarah Godlewski is here to talk retirement savings, unclaimed property, student debt, so much more. Stay with us. News Update is next here on the Ideas Network.